I'm sorry, I love the phrase, the ever-present danger of feelings about other people.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
Masochist and Other Deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 106, we are talking about alternative history.
Or is that alternate history?
I don't know. My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Guelph, Ontario, Canada.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Announcements. Announcement number one. RJ, this is your 50th episode.
Yay!
Yes, it's very exciting. To be totally honest, we'd gone through several fourth host, you were the third fourth host on the podcast, and I was not sure how long you would be with us. So I'm very happy that you have stuck around and read books you did not enjoy with us.
I very second that.
I'm glad. Yeah. To be fair, I haven't read that many.
Hey, that just fits in well.
Yeah, I've read 75% of a book this month, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just add that to my bingo sheet. Okay, that's one square checked off.
It could be a double bingo this month.
It says someone read 0.25 or 0.5 of a book, but I'm going to check it off anyway, I think.
I think it counts.
Yeah.
Partial read.
No, it's been great. I love getting to chat with you guys a few times a month. And right now, I'm back at work and doing mostly reader's advisory while my branch is still closed to the public. I have drawn on my book club for masochist experiences because I like went and looked up some of our old episodes to see what books we had mentioned.
Oh.
Various genres that people were interested in when I was trying to find thrillers.
Well, that's very cool.
And so on.
Yeah, it's a shame that sometimes some of the genres are, like, if it's not current, it has less use.
Mm-hmm.
Other announcement, our format for August, which we've already announced, is visual novels. In August, we do a format instead of a genre. Format can be something like we've done like nonfiction audiobooks. We did, I think, like short story collections was a format we did, things like that. So those are what we count as formats. And so the one we doing this month is visual novels, which are kind of video games, fiction things, lots of reading in them at any rate. And we're streaming some of those on twitch.tv/bookclub4m. And you can also find them on our YouTube channel. And by the time this episode goes up, there should be an episode with RJ and I playing Dungeons and Lesbians.
Yeah. And possibly another game, depending on how long that one takes.
Who knows? We'll see. So there should be some episodes that you can go and watch if you want to see me awkwardly play visual novels. The other announcement is that as we're now doing every month for every episode, we're putting up a list of books by people of color on our for the genre that we're reading. And so you can find that on our website, bookclub4m.com. It'll be also in the show notes for this episode.
And I think some of us have read some of the ones on the list. So
yes,
we'll be able to give you a little bit of review during the episode.
Yeah. Can't always promise that, but this month we can.
Yeah.
All right. We ready to start in on the debate, the big debate for this episode?
What is alternative or alternate history?
Oh, I see. Yeah, alternate or alternative. I've seen both.
I use alternative.
My understanding is that alternate is American and alternative is Canadian.
Mm. Interesting.
We have no basis for this.
Yeah.
I saw it somewhere online.
Somewhere online.
Well, Goodreads uses alternate. I used alternative, but I don't know where that came from.
I think Novelist, I was looking at them on Novelist, the database, earlier today, and I think they use alternate, but I could be wrong.
The Wikipedia article for my book calls it an alternate history.
It's both, you know?
Wikipedia, that's probably where you read it, Matthew, because Wikipedia says alternate history or alternative history in parentheses in Commonwealth English for alternative history.
Oh, that's definitely Canadian then.
Commonwealth English is a weird phrase to use, but I get, yeah, I can also feel as though that was possibly a very long argument in Wikipedia.
Yeah, well, it links to an article called English in the Commonwealth of Nations.
Great. Okay, moving on.
Anyways, yes.
So did anyone have any like preconceptions coming into this genre? I noticed that I had this weird resistance to the genre itself because I thought it was all going to be war books. Uh-huh. But when I actually thought about it, I was like, but this actually covers all of the steampunk that I love to read. So what's that about?
Yeah.
Not all steampunk. I would really argue.
Not all steampunk counts as alternate history, or yes. Not all steampunk is fun? Because I could agree with both those statements.
Yeah, both of those are true. As we talked about in our steampunk episode last year, steampunk does not have to be on Earth.
Mm.
And so I've read steampunk that is not set on Earth and is set just in a like fantasy world that has steampunk stuff. And so it doesn't have to have that historical aspect to it, that true, theoretically true historical aspect. That true. Alternative history kind of needs to be based upon, I think.
I did wonder how much history or realism was necessary for the genre, because I realized one of the big names in alternate history is Harry Turtledove. And someone mentioned the book Guns of the South, so I went to read a summary of it, and it involves time travel. And so I think it was at that moment that I realized that my expectation that all alternate history necessarily could not have fantastical or weird elements to it was just like something I had made up in my brain.
But yeah. I think it's a common assumption from people who do reader's advisory on this stuff is that kind of feeling that it can't include such fantastical elements.
Right. And I think there is a tension between like what actually like the sort of broader version of this genre that definitely involves like books about time travel or like what if superheroes were real.
You've got all those Naomi Novik books with dragons in them.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing. And that assumption that you mentioned, which I think, most people have when you like mention alternate or alternative history, that it is like very realistic and usually based around like wars or these major events, and I guess I think of it as more of a, like a thought experiment, that is the thing that interests fans of this genre. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's definitely something, if you're doing reader's advisory, to try to tease out like, okay, so do you want like books about, you know, dragons in the 1800s or whatever? Or do you want what if Hitler was still alive? Like, that's the those are the two.
Yeah, there's definitely a balance between, like you said, this thought experiment, which I think is relevant not in just alternate history, but in speculative fiction as a whole. Like, there's a lot of what if niche that comes through in both cases, because for a lot of the what if statements, even if they're grounded in a very specific historical moment as much as possible. And so all of those little bits of like characters and events and like realities lived on the ground have to read truly. How that turns out is still a complete imagination of how things would go forward. And right. So it's an interesting tension. And I think for some people, the pure fantastical element, the zombies or the dragons or the time travel might be enough to break that. And what they want is a much more specific kind of idea thinking. That's what you're talking about, in terms of the alternate history. But I don't think everybody is necessarily as set into that very much. The stereotype being, you know, what if Hitler won the World War II? Or what if the South won the Civil War, even if it's because of aliens or time travel or whatever?
The theme of this episode, I think, is going to be what we all did to resist reading books about what if the South won the Civil War, or what if the Nazis won World War II.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
I read an article online that talked about the problems of alternate history in that way, and how focusing on those things is like, is it harmful to write and publish those books? And talked about a couple of years ago, there was an announcement that some streaming service was going to give a ton of money to fund some show about what if the South won the Civil War. And people are like, how about instead of telling stories about racists, you tell stories about black people? Have you considered that? And I really agree with it. Like, I can see why, like, America clearly has just like never gotten over that war. And so I can see why it is shows up in fiction all the time, but especially as a non-American, that specific scenario doesn't hold a lot of appeal to me.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier today about why, like, and we, as we've been talking about this episode, have brought up those two examples a bunch of times, and I think, you know, easily you will find hundreds of alternative history novels on one of those two premises. And I feel like it is a combination of those, like World War II and the Civil War, like holding this like outsized space in American history and culture. And therefore like being historical events that people are familiar with, and like it's pretty easy to research them. They're very well documented. The other thing is that they have very identifiable bad guys. And so you can like it, you know, feels very compelling to be like, what if the bad guys won? Which is a not terribly nuanced way to look at American history.
I think maybe also part of my resistance has to do with the fact that it's often a dystopic thought experiment, but one in which it feels much too close, I guess. Like, half the fun of the dystopic example, when, you know, the world is not burning around you currently, and you can take this thought experiment for what it is that it does feel removed from you in a way that alternate history about the Civil War or World War II going the other way doesn't.
I feel like right now especially is not a time for these stories, considering the number of like fascists and Nazis and I don't know what you'd call Confederate supporting Americans.
I mean, that was a little bit of a problem with the one that I ended up reading, even though mine is like very weird. We'll get there.
I was also thinking earlier today about this thing about like these easily identifiable bad guys and being like, oh, there's going to be a bunch of alternate and alternative. I need to not do that every time. Alternate history novels about this era and about like the 2016 election. And I think probably there are, well, I know that there are some already written, but yeah, I think it is interesting to be talking about this genre right now when I think a lot of writers will find it a fruitful time to imagine how things might have gone differently.
So I have two questions for you all. One is, how long ago does the change have to be for something to count as alternative history? And tied to that, how much past the point of change does the story have to go for it to count as alternative history? If my story is, I go back in time and kill Hitler, the end, that is alternative history. But it is not what anybody wants out of alternative history, I think. People want to find out how things change because of an event.
Right.
Or don't change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although if it's don't change, that seems like a very boring novel, Megan.
I know, but it would still be interesting because maybe it happens in a different way, but like the same major...
Exactly. Exactly. So it's a comment on how we end up in the same place because of our human nature as opposed to because of
great
historical
men and right, yeah, yeah. significant exactly. moments. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm tend to ride this line of like I'm willing to put historical things relatively close to my current timeline. So like I'm perfectly fine with like an alternate history of the 90s being an alternate history. But what if it's more like where you where the line is put for historical romance.
That's like 50 years or something like that.
Yeah, Ooh. It's like, exactly.
That was not within the person's lifetime, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what we said during our last historical genre episode.
Yeah.
Was the author's lifetime.
But even that had issues.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, so I was going to actually mention one, a little bit when you were talking about some of the setting clear bad guys and good guys thing and the like not very nuanced look at history that sometimes creates. There was one I just remembered I read many years ago called Pandemonium by Daryl Gregory. And it's basically like in the 1950s, people start being possessed and they're possessed by like essentially like comic book characters and they can do these weird fantastic things and they like believe themselves to be these people but they're also themselves at the same time, so it's like having two entities in the same body and the main character is one of these people. Anyways, I actually don't remember super well what happened in here, but I remember finding this an extremely enjoyable and interesting read, partially because it's an alternate history that explores what actually happened in our history, but from a weird point of view, and how this, you know, things might have played out similarly, even with these weird things going on. And because it doesn't have that clear, it doesn't deal with Nazis and like racists and stuff like that. It's dealing with much more complex kinds of ethical decisions. Well, not that those aren't complex ethical decisions, but I mean, like...
Different ones.
Different
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because some science fiction that is set in the future is now our present or past, it's kind of funny to think of them so within true. The lens of alternate history. Like, maybe that was a history we could have ended up in and we chose the wrong timeline or something. But
yep.
I feel like that's probably... not within the spirit of the genre to pick something that was written in the 80s and set in the 90s and
definitely not Megan
did not come to be.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but it is. So this one is one where the author was, I believe, alive at this time, although I think a kid, but like, so it's not set that far back in history, but I would still totally consider this an alternate history.
Well, one of the things I think is really interesting is that there are so many like message boards online with people writing like essentially like flash fiction, alternative history scenarios. And so someone will say like, oh, what if this happened? And a bunch of people will like give like responses to that. And like some of them become like really built out and stuff. And others are just like, you know, a couple sentences long. But it's like a genre as thought experiment, like half the time it seems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, we're in defining and not appeal factors, but I think that is a major appeal factor.
Mm-hmm.
Is this sort of what if thought experiment thing, like trying to build these connections and imagine a different timeline.
Previous experience besides the one I already mentioned?
I want to mention a couple of things. Experiences that I don't think count. Or are not, or might count, but not really. One of them is something I've read a little bit this month, but is also similar to a book I read years ago. And it's science fiction set in the far future, but that is based upon a very different past. And so there's several different series or books and short stories and stuff like that in which East Asian various East Asian nations got to North America before Europeans did. And this is another common alternative history trope, I think. But these are science fiction novels set in the far future. And like, you can see like the edges of these things being an influence on the story. But at the same time, like, because it's set hundreds of years in the future, it doesn't seem different enough to me to really count. Mm. Because like I already don't have a lot. Like I'm like, you have spaceships and all these other things. Like this is a different culture being in space. And like maybe it would look like this and maybe it wouldn't. Like I don't know. And because you're focusing – when you're in space, you have so many different – in the ones I've read, you've got so many different worlds. You've got so many different planets. You've got so many different humans in so many different parts of space that – bringing it back to something that happened hundreds of years ago on our Earth seems like it doesn't matter to some extent. Like, I feel like you could get to that point in the future from our point going a different route.
So it doesn't make it have as much of an impact as...
Yeah. It's like, does your alternative history novel matter if the Nazis won World War II and then in 2105 they lost and fascism was eliminated, and then your story is set in the year 2700.
Yeah, I don't feel like that ends up being the focus that alternative history is trying to do, because far future science fiction, like, we're not focusing on the differences of the past at that point, so it just doesn't play as big of a role.
And like, I'm not saying that these worlds will not be different, but that they could be similar enough to a science fiction novel in the future that because a novel is a novel and not an encyclopedia about every aspect of the world, you could tell a story and not know that it's an alternative history, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Next thing is I want to talk about What If comics from Marvel. These are very common. They are like, what if... you know, Captain America never defroze from the block of ice, he was frozen. What if, I can't even think of examples right now. And they're all like based on things that happened in the Marvel universe. And it's like, what if something happened differently? What if the Punisher didn't become the Punisher? Well, the answer is that he becomes the Punisher and everybody dies anyway. Everyone always dies at the end of these things. That's like the one defining feature. Everything is worse. Despite, like, what if Peter Parker wasn't bitten by a radioactive spider? It's like everyone dies. Everyone always dies, almost always. But this is like, it's interesting to think about these as alternative history because they are alternative to the main Marvel universe, the storyline in the comics. But the comics themselves are, I think, not alternative history despite being different. Despite aliens having or being on Earth, despite there being people with superpowers, the world in the present day is still pretty similar to ours.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to be an alternative history, there has to be a change in the past that changes what our current life is like. X-Files is an alternative history, even though there have been aliens on the Earth for since the 40s or 50s or whatever it was, because the world they're running around in is basically the same as ours to everybody. If aliens show up 50 years ago and everyone now has magic technology, that's a change. But if it's still basically the same, to me, it is not alternative history. Okay, I will now be quiet.
No, that's fine. I was going to add, yeah, that is something that I definitely thought about while I was like looking for titles for our list of alternate history books by people of color. There was one that I took off because it was about vampires. I didn't take it off because it was about vampires, but I read a bunch of reviews of it and plot summaries to try to get a sense of if the vampires, like in, you know, the early 20th century New Orleans, if they were secret or not. And that's the thing that I think takes it from being like just a superhero story or a vampire story or a whatever story set in the past or, you know, like with connections to the past versus an alternate history is like, if the magical, mystical, science fiction-y thing is like underground and secret, then plausibly it could still be set in the same exact timeline that we're in. If it is like, you know, changes society in some way, like everybody knows there's vampires and they are, you know, ran for president or whatever. That's the kind of thing I associate with the genre, but maybe that's a little reductive. Then that might be alternative history. But yeah, if it's same time period, just vampires and nobody knows, then I don't think it counts. Also, when I was looking up, trying to find books to read this month, one of the recommendations that I ran into was for Superman Red Son.
Yep.
Which is, what if Superman, was raised in the Soviet Union? Yeah, is the same kind of thing where I'm like, I don't think that counts.
Yeah. And like, it does and it doesn't, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same kind of what if-y thought experiment thing, which I think would appeal to fans of the genre. But I don't know that it is quite the same.
The issue is that, like, the person has to have a base understanding of this superhero, of Superman, before you can do this alternative version.
Right. If you don't know who Superman is and what he's usually like, yeah, then it doesn't matter.
Would you say that you had past reading experience with alternate or alternative history, RJ?
I was trying to think of some. I think I've probably read some, like, edge cases, like the Air Affair. It definitely, like, changes some historical events, but is also, like, a bit too fantastical, I think, to really appeal to what we assume the fans of this genre are like, which is maybe not fair. Yeah, I think any reading that I've done in this genre is probably stuff like that, where it's edge cases or sort of incidental. I read what was the Neil Gaiman Marvel comic?
1602.
Yeah, I read 1602.
Was that an enjoyable experience?
Right. I read it a long time ago. I think I enjoyed it at the time. I think I've, like, grown more cynical about comics since then, and so I might enjoy it less now. But I don't know.
I've read it too, and I don't remember anything about it.
Oh, I think. Isn't Jean Grey, like, disguised as a boy or something in that?
As I mentioned, don't remember anything.
I was trying to remember. I was like, yeah, I feel like there's something that I have since reflected on that I was like, I don't think I would like that as much on a reread. Yeah. And that might be part of it. Megan, do you have experience with this genre?
Well, like I said, a lot of steampunk could conceivably fall under alternate history. And so I was looking at my list on Goodreads, and one of them, I mean, the third tag is alternate history. So, and it was one of my favorite, definitely a favorite series that I read. It's The Milkweed Tip Trich by Ian Tregellis, and it's set in 1939, so it's definitely like a World War II Hitlery thing, only the Nazis have weird science experiment supermen, and the British have made pacts with demons, so it's also a little bit like Mr. Strange, Mr. Norris and Jonathan Strange?
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Anyway, Susanna Clarke, you all know what I'm talking about. It's like 900 yeah. pages long. Yeah. So kind of similar in that, only much, much, much more depressing. Like, things go terribly wrong, terribly badly for our main character, but I think it's excellently written. But I just like too much science fiction and fantasy, I think, in my general reading.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would not enjoy a straight alternate history, as I have found, but I think that dilutes the waters a little bit if we think of the strict realism historical basis that some alternate history fans are looking for.
To me, the issue with those things is, like, you have this world in which there is magic or steampunk technology or whatever, and, like, World War II still happens basically the same way. Like, did nothing else in history change?
Well, I wouldn't say it happened in the same way.
this is the reason why I personally don't see most steampunk as alternative history, because most of them are not talking about, I want to see large scale societal changes. And I feel like a lot of steampunk is not delivering those.
Well, it's a smaller scale idea thought experiment going on. So I feel like you can have an alternate history and think about how smaller technology changes could affect people's day-to-day life in a different way. And sure, you can still have the large scale stuff, but that makes for like, it makes for a much bigger book necessarily. And so I feel like that's a constraint that shouldn't be necessary for the genre itself. Like the flash fiction that you were talking about before, like you can have a much smaller sort of snapshotty type of view of, mm-hmm. of what that means. But that's personal opinion. So read what you will.
Lindsay Ellis has a great video about the Netflix film Bright. I don't know if you all remember that one.
Nah.
That was the Will Smith orc buddy cop.
Oh, yeah. Shadowrun.
Yeah, pretty much. It's very bad, the film.
No, it's so good.
And, yeah, Lindsay Ellis just talks in her video about how, like, one of the major problems, like, there's a lot of problems with that movie, but one of the major problems is that the conceit is that, you know, like fairies and elves and orcs have all existed in the world alongside humans for thousands of years. And yet they are in Los Angeles, like the same city of Los Angeles. And they make references to like, you know, culture and historical events that like somebody makes a joke about the Alamo and she keeps coming back to it. And she's like, okay, so, like, this conflict between orcs and humans happened thousands of years ago, and the Alamo still played out, like, exactly the same way. Like, and she talks about how, like, you know, the solution to that is to make this divergence point in history much closer to the present than, like, thousands of years ago, because to make something like a major change such as this thousands of years in the past, and then to have present day society look pretty much the same is like pretty wildly thoughtless writing.
Yeah. Anna, have you read many?
I mentioned two already. I don't remember anything else specific.
I do want to mention The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon.
Oh, yeah.
As an alternative history that I have read and enjoyed in the past. It is about after World War II, a Jewish settlement is set up in Alaska instead of the Middle East. And what happens 60 years after that? I don't remember all the details, but it was good.
It was a lot of chess.
Sure.
That's all I remember.
I remembered that I have also read Battle Royale by Kushan Takami, which is the... Even if you have not read it, you may have heard of it when The Hunger Games came out. People were like, oh, this is a Battle Royale ripoff, which is arguable. But Battle Royale is probably the most traditional alternate history I've read. And even then, I don't think a lot of people would call it to mind right away as an example of the genre.
Mm-hmm. Because it seems... historical change is not the focus of the story.
Right, yeah. It's set in an alternate timeline where, like, events in history played out differently. But it is very much about this group of students who are forced to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty disconnected from the world at large. Yeah. Like, literally on an island. Literally, they're you know, PUBG'd into a Battle Royale scenario. Player Unknown Battleground.
Okay, this is enough. We need to start talking about the books we read.
Yes, yes. We've been talking a while.
Okay, but can I check off less idea of what a genre is after trying to define it on the bingo sheet?
Yes.
Fair. Great.
I like that you're playing your own bingo sheet.
I want to see how it works. I made it, so at least one person is going to use it.
This is good. We're playtesting.
By the way, I also didn't even realize talking or laughing over each other. Got that one too.
Oh, yep.
Oh, yeah, true. Definitely.
And I think I said in the show notes already, so that's also there. Great. Oh, I've almost got bingo.
one show. He's going to do it one show.
Let's see if we can get another one. Megan, how many books did you read?
Two.
I read 70% of one.
Yeah, I read about 75% of one.
It says Megan reads more books than everyone else combined. I read over two, so unfortunately I do not get that one.
Not this week.
Breaking the mold.
All right, we usually do how we selected. Do we need to talk about that? I'm gathering right now that our selection process is a little like weak because it's very pandemic driven.
Yes.
What can I find that's available on ebook platforms?
Yep. Done. And or in my house already.
Yes.
Tied into that, I did use the books by people of color list that we created and requested and read a couple of things from that list.
That's good.
I asked the Facebook group if they wanted me to read something that was more traditionally classic because I knew that I didn't want to, but nobody said anything, so I didn't have to. It was great. It's also why I didn't post it to Twitter. I was like, no, I got a good thing going here. Nobody wants me to read Turtle Dove. It's good.
Okay, so to the listeners that like it when we read things we don't enjoy, you've got to be more active.
Listeners, if you contribute to these when we ask questions like this, you can force us to be more masochistic.
Yeah, join our Facebook group. Follow us on Twitter.
Or at least me.
At least Megan,
yeah. Megan put herself up for it. I generally just avoid it. Like, I'm not contributing to Facebook or Twitter, really, on this topic, so you can't make me.
Okay, Matthew, you read the most, so you go first.
Sure. Yeah. So the first one I'll talk about is I read two novellas by P. Jelly Clark, both of which were on the list you put together, RJ, I believe. The Haunting of Tramcar 015, which is set in the same world as in a short story I read earlier this year that I enjoyed, that is called A Dead Djinn in Cairo. And there's a novel coming out this fall, maybe, or next year, or some point in the future. And these are set in Egypt, in which in the early 20th century, so it's like around 1910s, I believe, and it is decades after magic, djinns and stuff have come back to the world. I can't remember exactly the dates, like say the mid 19th century, they've come back. And it's decades and decades later. So it's not set in the present day. So we don't know exactly what's going on now, but it is very different from what the world was like at that point. So Egypt has become independent of European powers. And they are, you know, thriving politically in education and all of these different areas. And one of the plot points of The Haunting of Tramcar 015 in the background going on is the fight for women's suffrage in Egypt. And so women are trying to get the right to vote. And there's references to how women in like England and other European countries had tried to do this and failed. And so I thought that was kind of interesting that this is showing how the world is very different in different places without the story being set there. But it is about a tram car. And so they have trams. They have like magic technology trams in Egypt. So there's all this fancy stuff. The cover looks a very modern version of Cairo, I guess. And there's some detectives in the Ministry of Alchemy, Enchantments, and Supernatural Entities are trying to figure out how to deal with this possessed tram car. And it's a fun story. The other one has a different detective who is figuring out about a dead djinn or genie in Cairo. And that is a character who is a woman detective who dresses in like English suits, which is considered this really odd thing on multiple levels, because they're like, England is kind of a backwater. not like a backwater, but like they're like, them? Like, why them? Is kind of a thing in that too. So I thought these were both fun stories. A Dead Djinn in Cairo, you can just read online for free. So there's a link in the show notes. And I also get to check off, what is it? Read something because it's short on the book chosen for her genre because it is short. Checked on the bingo sheet.
Oh, I just realized, while I didn't read more books than anyone else, I did read 1,200 pages worth of alternative history this month.
Okay, I'm going to check you off for that bingo square then.
Book. Yeah.
I did not read that much. These are like 100 pages each, 130. The other one was The Black God's Drums, which is kind of more steampunky thing set in New Orleans. And it has the, you know, the steampunk stuff of you know, Zeppelins and stuff like that going on. But it also talks a lot about how Haiti as a country had become independent using magic, and how that had dramatically changed like global events and stuff based on that. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. I was reminded of a story. I don't think it was in this one. No, it wasn't in this one. Cause in this one, there's like the Civil War ended up being a stalemate or something, but there was another book I was reading about, and I can't remember the title now, which, and I think this is a really interesting Civil War scenario, a much more interesting Civil War scenario, which is that after the American Civil War, a number of states were given to Black Americans as repartition. What is the word I'm looking for?
Reparations.
Okay. So several states were given to Black people as reparations. And so they have their own country as well. And I think that's a kind of a more interesting scenario than, oh, what if the racist one? Megan, talk about your 1,200 pages.
Yeah. So the first one that I tackled, because I was definitely in the, oh, my Lord, I don't want to read about Nazis or the Civil War, is a completely different conceit. It's called The Year of Rice and Salt by Kim Stanley Robinson, a British writer. And it starts out saying, okay, so it's the year 1400, and in regular historical whatever, the Black Death kills, you know, up to 15%, or not 50% of Europeans over, you know, the different plagues, and so it goes. But what if the plague kills 99% of the Europeans, and they are completely wiped off the mat? Like, how do the different balance of powers react to, like, how does this all play out within, for the next, I don't know, let's say 1,000 years. Now, this book is 760 pages long. And instead of, like, there's a number of ways you can deal with covering this amount of history over time. Like a generational novel might do this, but what Robinson does here is there's a collection of souls, and they get reincarnated through different periods in this history, so that you can see, you know, different areas, different time periods, different struggles. You know, they show up in China, they show up in Japan, they show up in North America. There's two sort of main personalities, because there's no, like, continuity in ethnicity or gender, or even whether or not they're human. Like, at one point, one of the souls shows up as a tiger. But there's like a fiery personality, and there's sort of a more, a cooler, more passive personality, and they interact with each other. And there's other like, members of the soul group, the Jati, who appear, but it's less clear, like from one story to the next, where the lines are, but you can totally tell the two main personalities pretty much in every, episode. So it was really interesting. I have taken histories of India and China in my undergraduate degree, but it was difficult to sort of make as many links as to what was happening during this imagined timeline compared to what I had learned, because, you know, it's a mess of dates and names and stuff like that. So it's a little bit harder to tie that into the kind of stories and experiences that are going on when you don't have that big European counterbalance within the stories. So that was really interesting, both with the way that Robinson tackles how to cover that much, that complete global history up until, I will say, something like present day, because they get steam power and floating ships and all that jazz. And I won't go too far into the technology stuff, because it's interesting to see how it plays out in different world powers and how they counterbalance. But it was very long. I think there were one or two moments when I was three quarters of the way through and I was like, bye.
I tried to read this one and gave up. I did the first two time periods, and the first one was like violent in a way that,
oh, man,
I found upsetting.
I did not need to know how eunuchs happened.
Nope, did not need to know that either. So, yeah, warning for violence just to genitalia, flinchy. I guess. I don't know.
Sounds a lot like becoming a health sciences librarian, and periodically people have to explain things to you that they need to look up, and then you look them up, and you have to figure out more details about how the concept works and how things happen, and the next thing you know way, way, way too much about a medical, like, treatment plan that you just did not want to know existed.
I will never be a medical librarian.
I mean, at the very least, that was only a couple of minutes of my life and, like, one moment where I had to go and turn to someone and be like, you don't need to know this, but I need to tell someone that now I know this.
Oh, no. Yeah. I did have one time where I was teaching a class and I was showing how, like, accessing full text work. But, of course, the particular one I just picked out of random to open up had, like, a lot of very lovely full color pictures of a dissection of something or another part of a body. And I was like, oh, pretty pictures. We'll close that now.
Yep.
I also didn't really dig the reincarnation element of this story. I felt it made a long book longer unnecessarily.
I was a little bit confused about what they were trying to do, because they show up in the reincarnation place over and over again. Uh-huh. And sometimes they remember and sometimes they don't. And I wasn't quite sure, like, to what end we were supposed to get to by the end of the book. Yeah. But there it was. That was one way of linking all that long, 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 long history.
I did go and read the Wikipedia article that describes briefly the different time periods, because I was curious to see what happens, but not enough to read a very long book.
What did you attempt, RJ?
So I read 75%, and I will probably sit down and finish it tonight, so I can move on to my next book with a clear slate. I read The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. And if you're not familiar, the sort of conceit, the alternate element, is that the Underground Railroad in this world was a literal railroad, a literal underground locomotive that transported people across different states. And that part of it feels a little, I wrote down fantastical, but that's not the right word, because nothing in this book feels fantastical, because it is a story about slavery and everything feels very horrifying. But the railroad itself, there's not, at least 75% of the way through, there's no explanation of, like, how it was constructed or how it came to be or how it, like, runs underneath towns and remains undetected. Like, they don't talk about, like, how deep under the earth it is, unless I, you know, did not digest that part of it, which is possible. I have pretty bad spatial reasoning, so if they, like, described a descent, I may not have been able to imagine how underground they were talking about. But, yeah, it is, I was worried that this one might not count per se for the genre, because that change feels so sort of unexplained and unrealistic in a way. But I think that's, like, goes along with the tone of the novel. Colson Whitehead also is collapsing some historical events, so they are happening concurrently. And I saw somewhere, probably just like in the flap copy about this book, compare it to Gulliver's Travels, where the main character is just like going to these different places and witnessing these different, like, every state feels very distinct. And I think that is accurate. I think of alternate history as epic in scale, as we kind of talked about, and concerned with these sort of widespread ramifications and this world-building thought experiment. And so far, my experience with this book is that it is very concerned with individuals. It is a very character-driven story and concerned with individuals, not just the main character, Cora, who is a runaway slave, but with, like, all of the people around her, it will occasionally, like, shift focus to them and expand on their life story. which is definitely a thing that is holding my interest, even when it is a difficult story to read. So whether or not it counts for the genre, shrug.
Yeah. I read this with an adult book club as part of work, and it was definitely a challenging read for many people just because of the subject matter. And it doesn't feel alternative history because all those things kind of, like that type of thing really happened through the history of the United States. So it felt a little bit more like, a dash of magical realism with regards to the you know, actual Underground Railroad being a train on a track rather than a series of people with safe spaces. And then a little bit of, like, almost time travel, I want to say, in terms of how the different states that Cora goes through are different periods in the oppression of Black people in the States, different approaches white people had of dealing with their discomfort. But it's certainly historical.
All right, I guess it's my turn. So I read The Last Days of New Paris by China Miéville.
Oh my.
Oh my, huh? Have you read this?
Yeah, I read this for New Weird, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Which, like, fair. It's pretty weird. But it does come up in, like, Wikipedia and stuff and in descriptions as, like, alternative history,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'd say it counts.
Yeah, I think it does count, although it may not be the type of reading experience that some people are going for. Like, this would be one where you'd have to suss out their patience for basically postmodern and weird writing.
Are you willing to look up an online guide to understand what art is being described in this book?
Yeah. Yeah, so there is we can put in the show notes a guide to some of the art. So anyways, I should actually describe what's going on here so you understand why you would need to actually look up all this art. So the setting moves between 1950 Paris and 1941 Paris. It imagines that in 1941 something happened, which I'll not go into more details on. You can read the book. That caused essentially surrealist art to manifest itself in the real world. And this was all mixed along with Nazis' fascination with occultism and their bringing up demons from hell. And all of this manifested in Paris, and Paris was then subsequently blocked off from the rest of the world. And in 1950, we are with a character who still lives in Paris, in this altered Paris that is sort of surrealist and also filled with demons. And the surrealism comes out as manifestations of different images, and I'm going to call them creatures, but they're not really creatures, things. Animate things of surrealist mishmashes that wander around the city. And the main character, basically what's happening is there's an ongoing sort of battle within Paris. They're still kind of fighting World War II to a degree. Paris is still trying to, like, it has its resistance forces. They're kind of fractured into different groups. Some of them support the surrealism. Some of them support other aspects of, like, free Paris and, like, others. And then the Nazis. There's Nazis trapped in there with them when they walled off the city. And everybody's still battling out, and things are starting to swing kind of in the direction of the Nazis, and there's some really, you know, it is a war book. So, like, that is one thing to, like, warn you about, although it's pretty, it is surrealist, and a lot of, like, the descriptions are very post, like, what's going on, and don't make much sense sometimes, and it's very based on the art, and it's good to see the art to get a sense of, like, what's happening, although you don't have to. I just read it without looking at it, and then I went back afterwards and looked at, I just, like, literally looked at the pictures now. But and there's a couple of them in the book, but not very many. So I don't remember where I was going before I went on, like, five little tangents there in a row. What was I saying? I don't know. Anyways. So the book is kind of following a main character who is making his way through this space and has a very strong connection with these surrealist manifestations and is trying to leave the city if he can, but is interrupted on the way to doing this. And there's sort of a pseudo-resolution of the situation. It's interesting. Anyways, the book is actually very enjoyable to read. Chana Miéville is a good author. You do have to have a lot of patience with the postmodern style where you kind of have to just keep reading despite not really understanding what the sentence meant or said. this felt very much like when I read Mason and Dixon, where I was just like, I don't know what that said exactly, but that's okay. I got the feeling, and the feeling is what matters. The general tone of it is what matters, and that's enough. And it's actually like there's enough of a plot line in here that you can follow what's going on. It's just like some of the specific descriptions are just very like you'll get lost in the words, and that's fine. That's the way it's supposed to be. So you have to have a tolerance for that. But other than that, it's been enjoyable to read. I'm not quite done with it. Although I know what's going to happen, but that's fine. I'm still going to probably finish it. There's not that much left. And it's short. It's a novella. I read a very short thing. I only made it like 75% of the way through, and I still only read 145 pages. So, like, it's short.
You've been really busy, though.
I may not have read much of this, but I have read a lot in the last month plus.
Anyway, I'm checking off someone almost finishes a book on my bingo sheet.
How about pick something because it was really short?
I already checked that one
yeah,
off.
Yeah, I did. I definitely, yeah.
I don't get to check them multiple times, Megan.
Oh,
double bingo.
Darn. This was picked both because it was on my shelf already and because it was very short. But also I thought it counted and I wanted to read. I had only read one other thing by Chana Miéville. I can't even remember which one it was at this point. But anyways, it's been a very long time. So I kind of wanted to read something else by this author. So that's part of the reason I picked it too.
Well, that's good. That means we actually do cover World War II. And I've got one that's set just after the Civil War.
Yep. We still covered the stereotypical bases of...
Can't help it.
Yep. Alternate history.
This is a really... one of those pet peeves I have about how people use language. I always hate it when people just say the Civil War. There have been so many civil wars. It is the American Civil War. I want everyone to say that.
Okay.
Whenever someone says a reference to it, I'm like, oh, the Spanish Civil War? Oh, the English Civil War? Which Civil War do you mean? Because I'm that asshole is really what it comes down to.
I don't know if you're that asshole. I think the United States is that asshole.
True.
Yeah. I was about to say like, oh, the U.S. centering itself in history? Never heard of that before.
Shocking.
True. But me being willfully obtuse when someone makes it. A reference to it is also me being an asshole. So two assholes does not make a not asshole.
I mean, it's fine. That's fair. Did you have any other books that you were going to talk about, Matthew, or did you squish all yours up together?
No, I had one other. So when I asked for things to go on the bingo sheet a couple of episodes ago, one of the comments was that we didn't, or I guess me, I didn't talk about Batman comics as much as I used to. And so I was like, oh, well, here's a perfect opportunity for me to talk about Batman comics. You mentioned Superman Red Sun earlier. And so DC's version of these are called Elseworlds. And so I went and found one of them. And most of these are not actually – most of the Batman ones and a lot of the DC ones are not really historical fiction – alternative history in the same way. It's more – they're just like, what if Batman was Green Lantern or whatever? You know, like they're not the point of – Divergence is very recent a lot of the time. But the one I found and read is called Batman Holy Terror, written by Alan Brennert and drawn by Norm Breyfogle. And it is one set in which Oliver Cromwell, the guy who ruled England for a while, lived for 10 years longer than he did. So he didn't die of malaria, I think it was. And the United States of America is a Commonwealth nation run by a corrupt theocratic government, as it says on Wikipedia. So it is a very religious place, but the same things are happening. And so it's like Batman is Bruce Wayne. His parents are killed while he's a child by a mugger. Commissioner Gordon is still like a commissioner. And it's honestly kind of one of the problems with these sorts of things is that it's like it can't just be like, oh, what if Batman like became a priest because he lives in this weird religious world? But it's also like, okay, where's the Flash? Where's Superman? Where's Aquaman? Like, what happened to all these other characters? And they like pretty much everyone else has to show up. And this is not a very long comic. So it was fine, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing. It is the thing, I'm like, if I gave this to someone who had no understanding of like the DC universe, I think they would just be baffled. They would just be like, but what was the point of that scene with those characters? Why did you introduce them for no apparent reason? So yeah. Anyway, I'm checking off someone reads a graphic novel on the bingo sheet.
Okay, so the last book that I read, and this one I got suckered a little bit because for some reason I thought it was a novella. So I was like, oh, this will be a quick and easy read. And then it turned out to be like 450 pages. But that's fine because it was delightful and read really, really quickly. This was Dread Nation by Justina Ireland. And it's part of a series. So if you like it, there will be more. And it's a recent publication, 2018. And so the conceit is the Civil War ends in the United States because zombies. So our main character, who is half black, part of the resolution of the Civil War ends up being that black people in the United States and indigenous characters end up getting sent to education, re-education, training schools or camps or whatever to learn how to fight zombies. And our main character, Jane McKean, lucks into a sort of a more fancy finishing school type situation because all of the ladies need a ladies attendant to protect them from the zombies. So you need to have like manners along with sweet zombie killing skills. So she's got her sweet zombie killing skills, but she's a little bit impulsive and maybe speaks out or talks back or whatever, isn't as politic as maybe she needs to be. And so stuff happens, obviously. And she gets to kick a large amount of zombie butt. And also we deal with race relations because it's still the United States post-Civil War. And lots of people still have retrograde opinions about black people in the United States. And so there's that stuff going on as well as the ever-present danger of feelings about other people as well as zombies. So feelings and zombies. It was fun. What can I say?
I'm sorry. I love the phrase, the ever-present danger of feelings about other people.
Well, she's a teenager, yeah. Right? She's like 16 or 17.
Is this a YA novel? Mm-hmm.
And she has some feelings. Sure. Let me check what other people say. Yes, it is a young adult novel.
Because that's a bingo square. Oh, no, it's... I think it's only a bingo square if I read one. Yeah. Sorry, curses. Guys.
It's okay. Appeal factors?
Yeah. Well, we spoke a little bit about the appeal factors before, like RJ said, thought experiments. That's all I got. Historical stuff.
I wanted to briefly mention the like more stereotypical conception of this genre, which we discussed and not... We didn't read much of, but that, like, as I mentioned, that what if the bad guys won thought experiment. I wanted to expand a little on why I think that's not a very nuanced view of history, because I think the appeal in that is to reinforce our idea of, and, you know, I think it is mostly a American genre that you know, American writers who are exploring these, like, what if the South won, what if Nazis won, reinforces this idea of, like, America as it is in the real timeline today as, like, a great place of freedom. And reading these, you know, accounts of, like, what if things had gone bad and America was a dystopia, and a tyranny, I think, yeah, is not very nuanced because it, I don't know. I haven't read, you know, I'm sort of casting aspersions about this large body of work in this genre that I have not really read any of, but trying to put my finger on why it makes me uneasy and why I don't want to read it is because I think it is written with the assumption that America as is like a great place and everything went really well in the past.
Kind of like the idea of American exceptionalism.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think now is bad. Well, think how bad it could have been. It hadn't been for guns and things.
Right, yeah. That sort of casting of like, you know, we were the heroes of history and, you know, it could be so much worse. So appreciate America.
Yeah. It's kind of very similar to the normatizing of white people, right? Like you assume the character is white unless you're told otherwise sort of thing. It's in America, a lot of times you assume America is the great place unless explicitly told otherwise. And part of the point of this, part of the underlying assumption in these is that the America we have is the great place. And these other versions are not.
Oh, that's a good point.
I think that's basically what you're getting at, RJ, yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think that's a very interesting point. I was also thinking about to me, one of the things that is more interesting is the complication and the complicating of everyday ethics as opposed to, like, the big Nazis are bad sort of thing. It's like, but how does this play out in the basic lived experience of a day-to-day person on a really grayscale? And just like, I mean, to me, some of that came out in reading The Last Day of New Paris just a little bit. Sometimes it's a little reductive on this stuff, but there's a little bit of the like, war is not a big hero drama thing, right? War is just like people trying to figure out how to eat anything that they can in their area and still managing somehow with that to like hide a cow in their basement and grow a little tiny plot of food off of like a corner space somewhere where they ripped up the paving stones. And like, it's just, you know, the daily survival that does actually happen within these spaces. And it makes me think about places like Syria, you know, it makes me think about how people are living human lives, but also how people are living traumatized human lives in those spaces.
Mm-hmm. I do want to mention one manga series because it's not from the quote unquote West. It's not written by an English speaking person for an English speaking audience, like a lot of the other titles we're looking at. So it's Oku, The Inner Chambers by Fumi Yoshinaga. And it is about, in feudal Japan, a strange disease kills off the majority of men. And so Japan becomes a matriarchal society. And what happens after that? It's still set in feudal Japan, so it's not set up to the modern day. There is an example of something that is not so America-focused, I suppose, potentially. So European-focused.
Yeah. I had a few alternative history books by Asian authors on the list of the books by people of color that's going to be published with this episode. But I ended up taking them off today because I don't think they've ever been translated into English.
Oh.
So they're you know, like major works in the language they were written in, but I couldn't find there's no Goodreads profile for them in English, or I couldn't find them on WorldCat or, so I think that is interesting and like a great reason to read books in translation and to translate more books is like, we're complaining about how like US and Eurocentric this genre is. But I think there's probably lots of works in this genre, that we just can't read.
Yeah, great point. It's a translation issue.
Yeah.
So Which languages do I need to learn, RJ?
There was one in Korean and there was one in Japanese, I believe.
Okay.
I like the idea that you were literally making a note. I wanted to say one other thing about a potential appeal factor here that came that I felt particularly in reading The Last Days of New Paris, which is actually learning about our history through this. There's a lot of real people and real events and real artwork, and part of experiencing this can be going and looking up all that artwork and going up and looking the history of all these people. Like, pretty much everybody named in here is like a real person, and names are thrown around right, left, up, and down. So there's a lot to look up and think about how they actually relate to each other and what their actual history is. And also just like, I mean, I don't know that much about surrealism. So like educating yourself about the actual surrealist movement can be an interesting aspect of this. It can open up a piece of history and get you to explore that further and think more about, you know, what actually was the history around all this and the thinking, and how did the war and surrealism actually interact during that time period?
I think it would be... Yeah. I would be potentially interested in reading more fiction about art movements. Like if you could describe that book in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you could.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, and leave us a review so we can know what you enjoy about our millennial ramblings.
Oh, for all of our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral, the number four. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com. Ooh. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m and find us on Twitter or on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
Matthew, that sounded more haunted than celebratory.
That's kind of how Matthew sounds, right? That's when Matthew's excited, he sounds like a spooky ghost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, we have an actual URL now. Thank you, RJ.
You're welcome.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
You can also suggest a genre or a title on that website. We have a form you can fill out, but no promises.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, August 18th, when we'll be discussing the book Pet by Akwaeke Amazi.
Then on Tuesday, September 1st, we'll be talking about visual novels. And Matthew's got some screens going up and YouTube streams.
Live streams.
My brain just really pooped out. I knew I said something wrong, but I was like, what? Wait, what happened? What did I say? Matthew has some Twitch streams going up playing visual novels, both by himself, sadly, and also with others, as well as a YouTube channel that's going to go up with them.
Yes, so you can check those out. There's one every day, hopefully. RJ and Megan are co-hosting some with me, or have already done so, so you can take a look at the videos of those on YouTube. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can vote on which ones I play sometimes, or suggest things as well, though I don't know if I'll take any suggestions. That's it. The end. Goodbye.
That's it. The end. You have to edit this. Let's stop.
No more tangents. We're done.
No more words. I'm awake. I've had all the sugar.
No, I was just going to say a very brief pause here. I'm about to make probably a loud noise because I just noticed that my chair that I'm sitting on is falling apart, and I'm going to try to put it back together before I continue to sit on it.
That's going in the outtakes.
Oh, boy. I was going to say, good outtakes this week, everybody.
Half of the chairs in my house were collected off the street. And so whenever we have to stand on one of them to do something like unhook the fire alarm because we burnt something on the stove accidentally. I'm always kind of afraid that it will fall apart, but nothing has yet. Yep.
The theme of this episode is going to be millennials talking over each other. Have fun editing it, Matthew.
Yep. Did not get bingo.
Did you? Aww.
Try again next time.
I think I came close, but not quite.